This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. This is podcast number 137. It is the 2nd of October. We're now, yes, we've arrived. Time to put the heating on, ladies and gents. The cold snap has begun with Hurricane Helene. The storms, we've had lots of rain, flooding everywhere, trains delayed and all the rest of it, but we're still here. Didn't stop us. We're here. We're carrying on. I'm here with my good colleague, Henry Viola here at HC Viola. Please follow his account. And I'm Peter Higgins at Conquest 3. What a couple of weeks it's been. Market's been up, down and sideways, but still in a tiny little trading range of 8,200-ish, sub or minus 20 points, and up to 8,400 still. Depending on what happens, we could have a good last quarter. We may not. But given the fact that September is normally a very, very poor month for the markets, we've not done too bad, not too shabbily. So hopefully October will be stronger than September and will give us that nice close or a couple of closes above 8,400. Going straight into the markets, FTSE 100 closed today at 8,290 plus 14 points. It did touch 8,332 at intraday high. FTSE All Share is at 4,528. That was up a little 2.84 points today. And FTSE AIM All Share was down 0.34%, down 2 points at 734. The markets have had a bit of a boost over the past week and a bit. Miners and other companies and anything relating to China because of the China stimulus that's been pushed through. So that's had a boost for quite a bit of the market. It's given a bit of an uplift, much needed. Will it continue? I do not know. Will the stimulus that's been given almost in person to individuals in China, will they go out and spend it because they want the consumers to spend? I don't know. Will they save it? I don't know. Will they buy shares? Don't know. Will they buy Bitcoin? I don't know. Henry, what do you think they're going to do with that stimulus they've been given straight into their pockets?
Yeah, I think they're going to go and put it all on red. Now, I think that, it's nearly $100 billion, I think they've announced in stimulus. It's an awful lot of money. And the markets seem to be seeing this as some sort of saving grace for the whole of the Chinese economy, the whole of the market. You know, the property issues they've got are all suddenly magically going to be fixed. I am a little bit more sceptical, as you may guess from my tone, but the same thing worked in America, the same thing worked in the UK, the same thing worked in Europe. The central bank comes out with a huge check and things just seem to carry on. So... yeah. Who knows? Maybe it's upwards and onwards for Chinese markets from here.
We can only hope, mate. We can only hope. We need to see some spending. We'll see what the next numbers are coming out of China in the next month and 3 months' time. But we are in the month of October, ladies and gents. We have got the UK budget of our pending sort of, you know, heartbeats are waiting on that at the end of October. We've already had the heating costs of energy costs going up. I think it was 10%, wasn't it, Henry, or something daft like that?
Oh, it's outrageous.
Yeah, that's gone up as of the 1st of October, which is yesterday. So, yeah, so incrementally cost of living has gone up for everybody. So let's see what the budget does. Hopefully, fingers crossed, there's not a raid on all kinds of stuff to do with the pensions, but that's what the press are saying, the media. Hopefully they don't attack the ISA, but well, let's hope they don't do that, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll keep our fingers crossed that it's not an annihilation of of people that have actually been trying to invest and save and prepare for future, because the whole point of working hard and putting away your pension is that you make yourself a little bit more comfortable as and when you get to the time where you actually want to stop working for anybody and to look after your children or even your elders. You know, if you've got parents that are in the 70s, 80s, 90s, they now need you to look after them. You can't do that if you're still working, you know, full time in your 60s and 70s. So, you know, that's the whole point of a pension. So let's see what happens over the next couple of weeks, Henry. Have you got any thoughts on the budget, by the way?
I do. I mean, I'm going to be absolutely appalled if they go after pensions. I don't mind so much if they start tinkering around with the allowances in terms of the tax relief. So I've always found it peculiar that you give a 40% tax break to the highest earners and a 10% tax break to the lowest earners because you get relief on your marginal rate. Whereas surely the people that earn the least need the tax break the most and the people that earn the most need it the least. So if Rachel Reeves wants to go out and level the tax relief, say put a flat 30% for everybody, or wants to reverse them, or, you know, that I wouldn't have such an issue with. But certainly if she starts messing around with the tax-free lump sum or the lifetime allowance, trying to bring that back in, or changing the amount you can put into it, or taxing them on exit, there's all sorts of silly things that the Treasury could try, which I think will be hugely detrimental to those of us that do save into pensions. And to be honest, by doing so, become less of a burden on society around us, because we're not requiring the state to give us low income tax credits in our old age. We're not so reliant on the state pension and housing benefit when we're older because we've saved into a pension. And I think that's got to be taken into account. I certainly hope it's taken into account in any calculations that the Treasury does in the next budget.
I sincerely hope so, mate. But the thing I'd add on top of that, though, is the situation or the conversation being had by even the London Stock Exchange with their fear of the removal or potential removal of IHT on AIM stocks regarding inheritance tax on that. And basically saying, if you do that, that'll be the end of the AIM market and small caps that are listed that have got that sort of special designation. So we're very, very interesting. I think there's lots of lobbying, you know, I say lobbying, there's another word for that at the moment. I'm not going to use that word going on at present. And I think there's going to be lots of conversations had prior to that budget being spoken about and what they're going to do regarding investments, pensions, investments into industry and so on and so forth. It's going to be a game changer, you know.
That inheritance tax break to me, just leave it alone. I mean, I've seen a rather perverse situation where there are firms out there that are deliberately marketing AIM shares for the IHT break.
Absolutely.
So, you know, oh, Mrs. Miggins, you're 80, wouldn't you like your children to inherit 2 million tax free? Put it in these companies and you won't pay any inheritance tax, or your children won't. Only trouble is they're absolutely terrible companies. They lose a load of money. And so instead of giving 20% to the Treasury when you die, you end up giving 20% to the marketing capital losses. That side of it, I think, is a bit dubious. But I think there is an element of small business ownership whereby when people die and they are small business owners, if an inheritance tax liability is incurred at the point of death, the estate doesn't have the capital to pay it. And that's why the inheritance tax relief was put in the first place.
Yep.
You know, and that makes perfect sense to me. And so again, I would be hesitant of all the things that the Treasury could take a swing at in the next budget. I'd be minded just to leave well alone with that, to be honest with you.
Yeah, we can only hope. But as I always say, you know, regarding keeping things simple, and what makes sense, and using common sense, and using emotional intelligence, we don't always get that, Henry, with politicians, do we?
No, sadly not.
We will keep our fingers crossed, mate. Right, Henry, we've had lots of stuff happening over the past 12 months, it seems, if not longer. On and off, there's been a constant drip of negativity, and poor news and poor management and mismanagement of entities within the REIT space. specialist investment vehicles and so on and so forth. And we had quite a back and forth with several individuals on Twitter slash X last week regarding a certain company that we both held at one stage, Digital Infrastructure, DGI 9. So it's my suggestion. So anyone that's booing and shouting at the screen or listening to the pods and turning it off and walking away, my apologies. I will have some stocks and some funds and some investment related entities to talk about later on, which have done far better than DGI 9. But the theme today is going to be investment trusts. And we're going to talk about the good, the bad, the indifferent, and dividend heroes as well. So where do you want to start, Henry? Do you want to get the DGI 9 one out of the way? And then you can calm yourself down and then recompose yourself?
Well, I did promise you before we came on the air I would be polite about DGI 9. So apologies to any members of the audience that are hoping I've got a sharpened axe hidden behind my chair. I don't. For those of you that don't know, DGI 9 is the ticker symbol for Digital 9 Infrastructure Trust. It was a trust set up. It IPO'd a couple of years ago, raised a few hundred million. And the idea was they were going to go out and they were going to buy a basket of digital assets or digital infrastructure assets. So we're talking subsea internet cables and telephone masts and fiber optic internet providers and data centers, this sort of technology, the infrastructure that provides the technology in modern society. Sounds like a great investment. I liked it so much. I had it in my top 10 at one stage. I put a fair chunk of the portfolio in. I mean, I think we were about 5.5% at peak. So a fair weighting for me. And unfortunately, they have had catastrophe after catastrophe after catastrophe for the last, it's coming up for 2 years now, possibly slightly longer. First of all, the investment managers walked away from the business with no warning. There was an RNS one morning, the investment managers have gone. They'll begin a search for a new one. Now I thought, well, I don't know, maybe they fell out with someone internally. Maybe it's not a disaster. Then interest rates went up and all of a sudden they couldn't service the debt. They'd taken on a huge amount of debt to buy some of the assets. The cost of that debt went through the roof and the assets weren't generating enough cash flow to service the debt. And all of a sudden, you started getting little RNS warnings and little mentions in the quarterly updates and the annual reports about going concern warnings. This is where directors say, actually, although we're solvent right now, we're not sure we still will be in 12 months unless X and Y and Z happens and then we'll be okay. That's a going concern warning, effectively. Still, I thought to myself, well, it should be fine. There's clever people doing clever things. The share price drifted down and down and down. And then it was probably coming up for a year ago. The company announced that it was going to have a continuation vote. And the share price was at such a huge discount to the net asset value that the board had finally listened to shareholders and gone, we are clearly not generating value for you in the operation of this entity, this investment trust. Do you want us to still look after your money for you? And unsurprisingly, we all turned around and went, no thanks. Give us our checks back, please.
I love the fact you've been saying it so politely, Henry. Keep going there. It's brilliant.
My screaming on the tube that morning was less than polite, but now that was nearly a year ago, and since then we have had an enormous write down in the net asset value, which is absolutely atrocious. The fund manager, the asset manager, investment manager, is paid based on a percentage of the net asset value. So if they say we've got, I don't know, 100 million in assets under management, we'll charge 1% of that. We'll charge £1 million a year. Only trouble is, when you write those assets down, you no longer have 100 million. You never did. And they didn't just write it down by 5%. They knocked 70% off the flipping value. But they waited a year to do it.
Yep.
So we've all been happily sitting there whilst this investment manager, Triple Point, God bless them, happily suck money out of this fund whilst having it gradually drift down in value, whilst gradually trying to sell bits of it off and pay advisors Meanwhile, they've been getting paid on a net asset value that was absolute fiction.
Yep.
And so far, the only real coverage that I've seen has been a what I presume was a fairly well put together presentation by Donald Pond, who I think presented to ShareSoc, it might have been. I've seen some gnashing of teeth on Twitter from people like myself going, why on earth is this being allowed to happen? And other than that, not a lot. So I am still holding, but I am not a very happy holder of DGI9.
It's an appalling situation, Henry. I wrote about it extensively on Twitter. I've raised my concerns about the update coming out. And I think, where are we now? Wednesday? Monday. Monday, it came out after the bell. They delayed it, hadn't they?
Yeah. 5:20.
Delayed and delayed and delayed. And if it hadn't happened on Monday, it would have been suspended as an entity, wouldn't it? Right?
Yeah.
It came out at 5:21. I don't hold it anymore, but I'll explain what happened with my situation in a minute. But I was fuming. I was like, how can they not? Not a lot of people had even noticed that it was meant to be due out, you know, on the 30th by close of play. And they managed to put it out at 5:21. This is updating the NAV and the value of something which they had previously done themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, how long does it take you to
revise, check your own homework?
Double check your own homework. Yeah. To the point that you were that close to having the whole entity suspended. And if it had got suspended, I suspect it wouldn't have come back. There'd been like another home REIT just going off into the ether like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And again, fund managers and everybody else got caught out on that one. But yeah, I thought, you know what? It was listed, very popular, exposed to some really, really good sectors, going to be paying me a chunky 8.5% yield, Henry. Yeah. And I bought in, where are we now? April and March of 2023 at 76, more than 76 pence and 69 pence. And I went through the absolute ringer of all of it. There's a few little signs which I opted to ignore. Yeah. Yeah. Put the clown hat on, the dunce hat on here. And I went, nah, you know what? Give them another chance, Pete. You said you got conviction in it. Give it another 3 months. Give it another 6 months. Right. So I did. And the share price just ebbed and flowed and came down and came down. Eventually, Henry, if you recall, I'm trying to find the tweet now. I put a Teletubbies gif out when I exited,
yes.
And I said, I'm out of here, and I'm running off into the hills.
Yeah.
And I took a massive hit selling it out at 20 pence, and I got absolutely lampooned for selling out at 20 pence because, oh, look at him, he's selling out at the bottom. He hasn't got a Scooby-Doo. And then, you know, I think at that stage they were saying the NAV was something like 70 pence, right?
Yeah,
and I then, when they came out later on, I was saying, if they carry on what they're doing, the NAV is probably going to be nearer to 45 pence. The last time we talked about it, back in April of this year, and now they're saying the NAV is 46 pence. Having slashed it, and I don't believe them.
I don't believe them, mate.
And the share has gone to 17 pence.
The issue they've got is whether they're going to be able to realise that NAV, because everybody in the world can see that this is on fire right now. You are standing there at market trying to sell your hay bale whilst it's on fire. And the longer you stand there, you know, the less hay there is, the more distress people can see you in. Why is anybody going to buy a burning hay bale exactly? Now, I say all of this as somebody that's still got my shareholding. So Maybe I'm the greater fool, as it were, but that's not the correct use of the term, I know. But you know what I mean?
Yeah,
this is very, very difficult stuff. And it may well be that you made the right call at 20p.
It wasn't the right call, mate. I mean, my average was way above that and I got absolutely spanked on it. But, you know, no one gets it right. And we've got to hold our hands up and say, I own that stock and I made an absolute boohoo of it. And I failed with that investment, you know. But as you say, it doesn't and shouldn't be, you know, 90% of your portfolio, because this thing will happen. Yeah. And you have to be mindful of who the management companies are of these investment trusts.
Yeah.
Because some of them are good and some of them are exceptional and some of them are not very good. And Triple Point now, if they come out with anything, you, me and other people are watching that and going, I'm staying away from that one. You know, because they haven't dressed themselves in any sort of garments that you want to admire, you know? So yeah, not great at all. So that's one example of me getting absolutely spanked and taking a hiding on DGI9. I hope and pray for the shareholders, including yourself, Henry, that something is done with regards to the redress, and also that they actually do something with getting as much of that 46 point whatever it is pence NAV hit. But at the same time, they're using up monies just to market and sell and taking out the salaries out of that. So incrementally every 3 months, it's going to drip, 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 drip.
Well, the bit that gets me, and the comment we had just before we came on air, I will repeat this bit. When Neil Woodford did something very similar with a huge chunk of Middle England's money, it was all over everywhere. The FT, it was on the front page. There were books written about it. Everybody was up in arms. There were lawsuits. Yeah. People lost their jobs. DGI9, it's tumbleweed.
Tumbleweed.
Where Silence. Are the good and the great? Silence. I mean, it.
I'm not sure.
Maybe I'm the only person in the country that bought this. Maybe we've got, you know, an investment market and actually I'm the only one in it. I don't know.
No, there are tens of thousands of people holding DGI9, trust me. And there's also institutions, Henry.
Well, this is what gets right me because, now, you know, the people that have spoken to me on Twitter, and I've had some DM, I've had some public and I've had some private, and thank you for people that have reached out because, you know, it's good to talk about the difficult bits as well as the successes.
Absolutely.
And yet, we aren't the only ones. Like you say, there are fund managers that have bought this that basically seem to be engaged in group navel gazing right now. I'd quite like some of them to go and get the pitchforks because they've got lawyers and legal teams where I don't. Go and get the pitchforks and go and get us our money back, please.
Absolutely. If enough of them have lost money, Henry, I'm sure they'll be out, you know, campaigning at some point. I think, unfortunately, given, you know, it was September and now we're in October, I think they're preoccupied with where the conversation started on this podcast with regards to the budget and what does it mean for the whole investment industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, quite and that's possibly.
You know, DGI9 is one, you know, 0.5% or 0.1% of any portfolio that they've got. So
very true.
They'll refocus on that when and if the budget is over with, maybe. Yeah, that's an impressive pint pot you got there, mate. You're making me thirsty.
It is full of water. You'll be pleased to hear. I'm not
right. Okie dokie. Okie dokie. Right, I'm going to talk about another disaster, ladies and gents, that I hold in this space, just as lessons learned. And this is one that I purchased in June 2022 and in January 2023. And it is called Life Science REITs. And this, the ticker symbol for this is LABS, essentially. They're in the what we call, I've got to get this word right so no one misconstrues what I'm trying to talk about. It's the Golden Triangle, which is the top global life sciences region in the UK. And that, what's the triangle? It is London, Cambridge and Oxford. And it's been named that because of essentially a cluster of life sciences and healthcare and biopharma and sciences. You name it, that triangle is where it's meant to be at. And I read and did all my reading, and that's when all the REITs were Flavor Flav. And I thought to myself, that's guaranteed win, that is. Yeah, that's nailed on success, that is going to be. Yeah, I'm going to get a yield of 9.8% and I can sit and wait whilst they fill up their labs with tenants and large entities. And lots of biotech and pharma companies are going to go in there and make the REIT a success. Boy, oh boy, was I wrong.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Boy, oh boy, was I wrong.
Well, you've hit my battleship. ownership again here, because I've still got this as well.
Mate, I've still got it.
Oh, you've still got it as well.
It's the one in that space that I've kept with a view that the nav at the moment is, I'll have to find the nav. What is the nav again? 76 pence, the last actual nav. Yeah.
And it's way down at 40-something p, isn't it, the share price?
Earlier last month, it was down at 31 pence. It's currently at 40 pence. At some point or other, I'm hoping that they come out with a game-changing sort of tenant has bought X, Y, and Z. But I've kept that one because it's still trickling out a little bit of a dividend at the moment. So that's the reason why I've kept it. But my average is way down from where the price is. Way above, sorry, where the price is 40p at the minute. Yeah. My average is way above that. And I've kept that one. I'm not sure if I've kept it half for half. I do this sometimes where I keep something for a lesson and I look in. You know when you open your portfolio and that red light comes out?
Don't do that again.
Or it's like a pie that just smashes you on the face. Sometimes I keep things like that in my portfolio to say, what were the lessons from that again, Pete? Oh, was that lesson, was it? Have you seen anything you fancy that looks like that? You might well want to stay away from it. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, but at the moment, I've kept it, Henry. So I'm hoping the labs and the spaces that they've got will increase in tenants and rate increases will be made.
You see, to me, I can't see how they're making such a mess of it, because all the press I read and everybody I speak to is telling me that there is a huge shortage of specialist labs. I mean, I used to work for a quantity surveying practice. And you can't get that space. For love nor money. And yet these guys can't let it out. They've only got occupancy of 80%. Now, I think the problem, they've got two problems. One, again, is the borrowing. Borrowing costs have gone up. They've got a stack of debt. Yep. But also, it's not just laboratory space. And this wasn't something I really appreciated when I first bought the REIT. They've got a chunk of commercial property, i.e. offices. Yes. And what does nobody want to do anymore? Go to the office. Everybody wants to work at home in their pajamas and stay in bed all day, you know?
Exactly. But I must have misread it, because I thought the old idea of the office space was the office space linked to the labs.
So it does.
Well, if you're not going to just be in the lab. You're going to go out into your office. You're going to showcase what you're doing. You're going to have people working that are not just in lab suits.
You stay at home, you have some popcorn, you go to the lab, you grow Ebola, and then you come back and have some more popcorn. I think that's the plan.
So I must have read it wrong, mate. So this is what happened. So it's had a bit of a pop since they put out their half-year results on the 26th of September. So basically they were saying development and leasing progress underpinning earnings growth. Contracted rents for the investment portfolio increased 7.9% to 15.1 million from 14 million in 2023, with a further 0.6 million from developments, taking total contracted rents to 15.7, which is a bit of an increase, but not much really, given where it's been in the past. Adjusted earnings were up 6.3% to 3.4 million, up from 3.2 million. Adjusted earnings per share up 11.1% to 1 pence. And they declared a dividend, which is why I kept it. And full year first interim dividend 1 pence was declared in line with guidance. Portfolio value was basically unchanged, really, not 0.3 million increase. And like for like movement driven by 33 basis points outward of the net equivalent yield, so forth. But the interesting thing here for me, Henry, was the fact that it was basically saying, as with all of these labs, that despite all of that positivity, or some positivity, that the EPRA net tangible asset value had dipped down since December of 23 to 75 pence, something like that, going, here we go. So loan to value was not too bad at 28.83, showed a bit of progress, and debt was fully hedged at 4.5%. I'm thinking, that's still a bit high at 4.5 in this current environment, but they're doing what they can. They're doing what they can, Henry. They're doing what they can. But I've kept that one. It's a dog. It's not a recommendation, as with all the stocks that I'm calling out at the minute in this one. It's not. I don't know. We'll see what the management do in the next 12 months. But it's nearer to the door than it is into the boudoir of my portfolio, should I say.
Yeah. not going to be up there with AstraZeneca anytime soon, I don't think.
It's never going to be joining that. No. See, I think that's part of my bias. I was thinking, oh, yeah, you know, even AstraZeneca might. Nah. Anyway. So, yeah, have you got any thoughts on labs, Henry? You say you still hold it.
I still hold it. And I wonder if I'm just, I wonder if it's just wishful thinking. I mean, the thing about property, I once spoke to a chap who used to work for the Chinese Property Fund. I forget the name of it now. The Sovereign Wealth Fund, anyway. And what he was saying is the main thing to deal with property, the thing you have to watch out for is... Go on.
Is it Geico?
No, Geico's the US insurance, car insurance.
No, is it pronounced something different then? Okay, no worries. Carry on.
But anyway, he was saying that the thing that most investors get wrong with REITs is that there's a property cycle. Interest rates go down, prices go up. Interest rates go up, prices come back down. You have cycles of maintenance. You know, you build a building, it's brand new, everybody loves it. 10 years later, the roof's falling in and all the windows are shattered. You've got to repair them all. It costs money. You know, you have these cycles in property. And the thing that most investors get wrong is that they sort of buy at the top and sell at the bottom. And so I've always been very determined with my REITs to just buy them and hold them. And if I see something that obviously looks like a dip, which I measure against net asset value, I might top up a REIT. I've got a position, I've got a portfolio that I want an allocation to REITs within. I want it to form part of that portfolio. And as long as I don't deviate from that percentage too much, I'm not too concerned about what the individual positions do, unless they're doing a DGI9 and, you know, giving me a migraine at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Don't blame me, mate. I've got to keep looking out. I think it might be Ginkgo I'm thinking of, the other one.
It could be Ginkgo. It's something. Yeah. I'm going to end up saying something horrifically offensive if I start guessing at the name of the Chinese bond.
I'm thinking of Alan P.
Yeah, it's not the Golden Gecko Fund or whatever, you know.
No. I think it might be Ginkgo. Right, okie dokie. What I want to do now, sorry, unless you've got another one to go, haven't you? Because I've just done that.
Well, I was going to say, if you've got somewhere you wanted to go, I wanted to actually take a step back and just talk about the structure of investment funds for a minute.
Go for it.
We've launched straight into this point.
Because I've got a couple of positive ones I want to talk about and recommend.
Yeah, I mean,
about dividend heroes that people can do slow and steady. Because I want to reiterate to people that you shouldn't just look at the high dividend yield sort of investment trusts and other entities, because that's not always a sure sign of health regarding it. And sometimes the better ones that have been giving you the dividend heroes of 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years in some instances have got a lower dividend yield, but they've been giving you an incremental progressive dividend for 50 odd years. So don't be looking and thinking because someone's talking about a dividend yield of 5, 6, 7, 8%. And it's got a discount of 30%. That's a surefire winner. Because ordinarily, it is not.
Yeah, you're spot on. I mean, we'll cover this later in the episode. I mean, the thing I wanted to go right back to the beginnings of investment trusts. You know, for those members of the audience that don't actually know what we're talking about here, an investment trusts are actually a UK invention. From the research I was doing, they started in the UK. In the 1800s, the very first investment trust was the Foreign and Colonial Government Trust, which was established in 1868. It's a very old financial structure. And that investment trust was the first collective investment scheme ever in the world that I can find some sort of record of. I'm sure there were some unofficial ones somewhere. But effectively, the Foreign and Colonial Government Trust Fund specialized in buying government bonds, buying and selling government bonds. And it still actually is listed today. It operates today as the F&C Investment Trust, changed its name to back in 2018. So it's lasted all this time, you know, 150 plus years. Quite impressive, really. And the shares, you know, that you can find, the F&C Investment Trust, are available today. They're actually at a discount to net asset value. Which is a concept we're going to come back to slightly later in the episode. I do want to touch on this idea of what a net asset value is slightly later on. But before we go on to that, you'll have heard us on the show talking about investment trusts, but also mentioning things like mutual funds and also exchange-traded funds. And I just wanted to take a minute to talk about the differences between these three vehicles, because they are actually slightly different things. Now, all three of them are effectively investment vehicles. They let a group of individuals put their money together into some sort of structure and then go and buy assets, whether they're bonds, their properties, their shares, whatever. But they all do them in a slightly different way. Now, investment trusts, which is the structure that Peter and I are talking about right now, are what's called closed-ended funds, which means that they've got a fixed number of shares in circulation. So if, you know, Peter and Henry investment trust lists, we issue 100 shares at £1 each, we've got capital of £100. And those shares are traded on the stock market. If you want to buy a share of Peter and Henry investment trust, you've got to go and find someone else that's got one, and you've got to buy it off them. You can't come and buy it off us, you've got to go and buy it off them. And that structure fundamentally differs from what's called an open-ended trust, which is closer to what a mutual fund is, where shares are created or redeemed based on demand. So in that instance, if you've got a, I don't know, Peter and Henry mutual fund, you could come to me and Peter and you could say, I want to invest £1,000 with you. We'd issue another 1,000 shares at £1 each and we'd give them to you. Trouble is, when you want to get your cash back, we've then got to buy the shares back off you. And to do that, we've probably got to go and sell something because we don't have your cash anymore. We've gone and invested it. And this is where the trouble with mutual funds come in. There's an illiquidity issue. If we've gone and built or bought a building, say, we can't sell that tomorrow, but you might want your money tomorrow. So what do? Well, we have to sell the building at any price to give you your money back. Whereas you don't have that issue with investment trusts. So by extension, investment trust, you can also get this sort of premium or a discount to what's called the net asset value. And that net asset value is effectively the value of all the assets totaled together that the trust owns. So if Peter and I are, let's say we raise £100 million in capital and we go and buy £100 million worth of equities, and tomorrow those equities have gone up 10%, we've now got £110 million worth of assets. If the share price hasn't moved, if it's still valued at 100 million, i.e. a pound each, you're now sitting on a premium to the net asset value. Likewise, if the value of the assets fall, you're at a discount. And so the idea really behind investment trusts, as I see it, is to try to buy at a discount to net asset value and sell at a premium. And so some of the funds I want to talk about this evening, I've gone away and had a look at what causes these discounts and these premiums. So I thought we could talk a little bit about that. But also why that basic model I've just mentioned of buying at a discount and selling at a premium sometimes doesn't work the way you think it will. Does that sound good?
Absolutely perfect, mate. Absolutely perfect. Bit of detail. I tend to just do an helicopter view over things. So it's good to have that bit of detail about stuff and get people to think about what they're buying as well. Because if you take the wrong move, you're in the wrong space, you're going to end up making mistakes. And you shouldn't just look at the yield. You shouldn't just look at the previous performance, but look at what's going on macro-wise as well. It's important. And what I was going to have, the conversation I was going to be having a bit later on, I can say now, is also consider the companies, the investment trust companies, rather than natural investment trust that they are actually selling to you. You know what I mean? So that's something else to consider as well. But you mentioned the FNC investment trust, Henry, which you can find at with FCIT, I think is the one you were talking about. Yeah,
that's
so that
one.
Is one of the ones that I was going to talk about. Yeah, FCIT. As one of the dividend heroes. And what's a dividend hero is essentially an investments trust which has consistently increased their annual dividends for the past X amount of years, usually 20 years plus. And that has managed to do that for 53 consecutive years. And remarkably, given the growth of what the investment trust has done, it's currently yielding 1.47%. Performance of that investment trust over the past 12 months is 18.6. that's currently outperforming, I think, the FTSE 100. Sleepy beating the FTSE, which is, you know.
It's excellent. I mean, it really is. And that longevity of a fund, to me, speaks volumes, because you've got people, you know, like Triple Point that set up DGI9. They go well for 2 or 3 years and then they hit a brick wall and we all end up losing a fortune.
Yeah.
Or you can put your money with somebody that's been in the market since 1860 something or other?
1868, yeah.
You know, and okay, admittedly, it's not the same fund manager from 1868, because he'd be absolutely fossilized. And, you know, so things have moved on. But the fact that the institution survives speaks volumes as to their mindset. This isn't an investment trust that is shooting for the lights. They're not in the, they're not in gold mines that have got no gold in. They're not trying to land people on Mars with rockets that can't take off. You know, they're not trying to cure cancer with salt water. It's a proven methodology what they are doing, and it's worked for a very, very long time. And that gives you some, certainly would give me some confidence that their approach is something worth looking into.
Absolutely. One of the investment trusts that I wanted to talk about currently holds the record as a dividend hero. And this is one that I would confidently recommend others to research. So I'm going to put my head on this, and hopefully it just stops rolling over and doesn't decline. And the record's broken next year and it doesn't manage to get to 58. But it's had 57 years as a dividend year, 57 years of incrementally increasing its dividend. And that particular one is called Caledonia Investments, Henry, which I think
I've heard of.
It currently yields, CLDN is the ticker you need to look for. It currently leads 2%. Performance for 1 year total returns is 3.9, which is not blowing the doors off or anything like that. But essentially, it is one of those sort of areas where I think that, given what it does, investing across the world, I'll break the geography down for you guys. So you've got USA, 39% of it, UK, 23%, China. Yeah, China, we spoke about earlier with the stimulus, and some of it across Europe. Industry breakdown, general industries, or general industrials, should I say. Information technology, which for a boring sort of stock, you would not have thought that would be the case. But it's in that space. Consumer discretionary, finance in general, and other investment trusts in that particular space. And the last NAV on that one, the finals, it showed a total returns in the finals of 7.4%. And unfortunately, for the past 12 months, it hasn't done that well. However, current discount to NAV, Henry, is a whopping 37%, bizarrely. So we said 3.9% total returns. 10-year total returns is 112, which for a sleepy part of your portfolio, every 10 years you can get 112% from it. Wouldn't be too bad a performance, I don't think. So one of the interesting things I found about this, and this is reasons why it piqued my interest, it covers three different investment pools, and all of them contributed to growth, with the investment portfolio delivering a return of 8.9 in the year when it last reported, despite foreign exchange headwinds of 39 million. Get me tongue all over this, mate. Sorry. Wouldn't be a pod if I didn't, you know, mess a couple of words up, would it? You know, so three investment pools contribute to growth, and that was plus 12% return for public companies, plus 12.3% return on private capital, and plus 2.2% from funds. And what is very interesting here is that they've held and continue to hold two quite significant technology companies, none other than Microsoft and Oracle. They've had in their portfolio for some time, which for meant to be a sleepy little boring sort of entity, given the fact that they've got, like I say, a good 13% of the portfolio in information technology. That's not bad to have those sort of heavyweights in there. And they've obviously done quite well with them over the long term and bought them early and have kept them. So yeah, I was quite pleased with seeing that they had that. And the dividend, last one that they talked about to carry on the 57 years of incremental growth, was increased by 4.5% on this occasion. So if I was to, you know, put my hand on the Bible and say, if I wanted to buy one of those, and could they carry on doing it from the 57 years? I'm not sure about that, but could they do it for another 5, maybe 10? The way that they've managed it and, you know, as custodians of it and stewardship that they've held 57 years with being a dividend hero, I'd pick that over Labs. I'd pick that over DGI9. You know what I mean? I'd pick that over most of the ones that are out there that everyone's going, yeah, that's the one to buy. And currently it's got a discount, which is quite chunky in comparison to where the dividend has been historically. So,
well, it's interesting that discount, because, you know, the fact that you can buy investment trusts at either a premium or a discount, you know, a discount to the value of the underlying shares is effectively the underlying assets is effectively what you're saying. When we talk about buying a pound for 50p, this is it. It's the market saying that, you know, we recognize the net asset value, but we're going to give you an opportunity to buy the assets at a bargain. And on the flip side, you know, a premium means that the market's saying, well, if you want these assets, you're going to have to pay more than we think they're worth. Now, why would anybody do that? To me, there's, you know, these fluctuations, they're not quite just as simple as saying, well, cheap is good and expensive is bad, because, you know, what do you tend to pay more for? You tend to pay more for good quality, you know, good quality stuff.
Absolutely.
And you tend to pay less for poor quality. Now, that's, again, not always a given, but it is an aspect of investing that you've got to be aware of. I mean, I went away and had a look at shares that are on, investment trusts that run a huge discount to net asset value. One of the names that popped up, you might not be surprised, is Home REIT. The ticket is HOME. 70% discount to NAV.
But Henry, it may never come back, so that NAV is.
But bear with me, right? Now, this has got a portfolio of residential housing stock all over the UK, right? Tenants, there's a business there, supposedly. It's hit a brick wall, it's fallen down the brick wall, it's lying whimpering in the trash cans at your feet, you know. Do you want to go and buy it? Well, not really.
You can't, because it's suspended.
It's suspended. And why do you think it's been suspended? Because it is such a hot mess. And the thing is, if all you do as an investor is go and look at investment trusts and see which ones run a huge discount to net asset value, you're going to end up going and buying all the stuff in the bargain bin that nobody else wants. You know, the suit jacket with an arm ripped off and the tie with someone's cut with a pair of scissors. You know, the pint pot with a hole in the bottom.
Yeah, or it's a straight jacket and you're going into the home and you're not coming back out because you're just strapped up like that.
Exactly. So you've got to be careful with this stuff. I mean, you know, I was looking at, there was another one that popped up, Oxford Technology Venture Capital Trust. And this is a venture capital trust effectively goes and takes investors' money and it puts it in unlisted equities. So small startups, speculative businesses that are going to cure cancer tomorrow, or they're going to invent something that transports us to the moon in 30 seconds, who knows? But venture capital is really, you know, quite the risky end of investing. Mm-hmm. And the idea is they take your money, they go and put it in these small businesses, the businesses grow, they then exit their position in the businesses when someone else buys in, and they give you a nice healthy profit back.
Yeah.
Only trouble is they've lost 58% of their value over the last 10 years.
Wow.
Now that's another one that is trading at a discount to net asset value, and it sounds amazing when you look at what they're invested in. You know, we're almost buying the Starship Enterprise here. And yet it's done nothing other than destroy value. So that discount and premium concept, be a little bit careful with it.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEETS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to ShareePad today using the TWINPEETS promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Absolutely. Absolutely, mate. It's one of them that we've got to be mindful of. And I suspect there's going to be more of those as this debt situation comes. There's a lag, isn't there, regarding the debt situation. And this refinancing, which they're all having, well, not all, the poor managed ones are having to refinance, aren't they? Or they're looking at situations where they have to just say, you know what, take a vote as to whether they want to carry on. And the shareholder's saying, just shut up.
Just give us our money back, please. You know,
give us our money back if you can. So just be mindful. High dividend yield, high or large discount to NAV. Amber flags left, right and centre.
Just to me, anything over about 25% discount to NAV, I'm starting to go, hang on a minute, what's going on here?
Yeah, got to be careful, you know, and we're sitting there, like the both of us are sitting there with labs going, why are we still holding there? Why didn't we get rid of it earlier on? You know, we've got to be mindful. So let's talk about another quality one here, Henry, and you can pull up your data on this one here. So this one gives you, and again, I like my healthcare, I like my pharma, I like my exposure to that sector because of all the different things that are going on in the world. This one works and gives investors exposure to pharmaceutical, biotechnology and other related healthcare companies ranging from multinational brands to unquoted companies. And the top six holdings in this particular one are Eli Lilly & Co, Boston Scientific, AstraZeneca, Novo Nordisk, Intuitive Surgical and Merck. What am I talking about? I'm talking, I want to go into that. I nearly went into the song then, talk about Mr. Worldwide, but that's not the name of the company. It's a song by a certain artist. I'm not going to even go into that. Worldwide Healthcare Trust, Henry. Priced at £3.47. Ticker WWH. Tiny yield of 0.81%. Performance, 1 year's total returns of 12.2%, 10 years total returns, 149.5% for a little sleeper sitting in your portfolio, Henry.
It's not had a very good run since 2020, though. I'm just looking at it now. It's actually down. I mean, from the beginning of 2020, it's up. But yeah, since the beginning of 2021, it's not had a great time.
It's not a great time. So my thinking is, right, given its performance, its annualized CAGR, right, the last two or three years, it's underperformed that annualized CAGR. If the cycle goes back to the norm or the median, Henry, the next 3 or 4 or 5 years could be in line with that.
Past performance is no indication of future returns.
That's the one. That's the one. Say it louder. You're under arrest. So that's my thinking of it, Henry. And they've had the same management company for the last 35 years. They're called OrbiMed Capital. They've been involved since 1985. And they know the way around the healthcare companies around the world. And essentially, they've grown it into the largest entity, largest healthcare investment firm, or one of the largest when I last looked. So, and it's beaten the the FTSE All share over the past 20 years up until the dip that we've just had in recent months. Yeah. So yeah. And it's not UK, focused.
Anyway. No, that's a very, very popular investment trust.
It's got nice exposure. We've seen how Novo Nordisk has done in recent months and year because of the obesity drugs and all the rest of it that it's involved in. So that was one I wanted to just skim over because I'm conscious of the time. But that would be another one on a long-term basis, 3, 5, 10 years. At some point or other, there'll be a buying opportunity, you know, with that. If it's not this week, next month, beginning of 2025, that would be another one. I would just go 1%, 1.5, 2% of the portfolio, stick it in there, forget about it.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Buy it for your little niece, buy it for your little cousin and just say, here you go. You know.
A lot to like in that. Yeah, a lot to like.
Yeah. So let's see what happens with that, you know. Nice exposure to play the space that's growing. Yeah, sector that's growing. Unlike labs. Okay, what you got? What are you going to go with?
Well, actually, I was going to take a bit of a break from the investment trusts theme and talk about the competition.
Oh, yes. The good old Twin Peaks Investing podcast competition. The challenge. I fear there's bad news coming, so I'm just going to sit down a bit lower in my chair.
Peter's been trying to dodge this one. He's been hoping I won't bring it up, but he's not going to escape, ladies and gentlemen. So
there's a madness song called, and there's a line in the madness song called, "You're an embarrassment." Dun, dun. Go on.
So we had some lovely feedback. I should start by saying the last episode. We had some absolutely marvellous feedback from the audience on YouTube, on Twitter, on Blue Sky, emails. We were swamped. It was really, really lovely. And one of the comments that came in, somebody asked the question, not only could I run the figures for the month of September, but when I do so, could I also let people know how we're doing in terms of, you know, the hosts performing in the league generally? So I will start by saying that actually, year to date, the Twin Peaks Investing audience have had a calamitous year. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if you'd all been at the Christmas sherry when you picked these shares, but out of 143 in the competition, 80 of you have currently lost money with your picks. So, you know, do better next time, please, ladies and gentlemen. Now, there are still, you know, 3 months left to go, so things can turn round. But I think we've not had a great cohort performance this year. Now, year to date, I will say that in first place, out of Peter and I, anyway, I'm pleased to say it's actually me, myself, and I. You might not believe it, ladies and gentlemen, but yours truly, Henry Viola Air, is in a creditable, 38th position with a return of 9.4% year to date. So we're
bravo,
not doing
bravo,
too bad.
Bravo. Positive territory.
Unfortunately, Mr. Higgins has had a little bit of a car crash here. He's sliding off green, somewhat in a similar manner to his portfolio, which is down in 98th position, I'm afraid, with a return.
Did you say
98th,
Henry?
98th.
That's got even worse since when I spoke about it. Oh my gosh.
With a negative 14.6% return, ladies and gentlemen. So
I blame it all on Atlantic Lithium, mate. I blame it all on them.
You've just not seen what I've done with the formula to calculate your shares.
Oh, dear.
You've got a penalty score. But top of the board at the moment is DJC at DJC37986880 with a 68.9% return year to date. 68.9. So, DJC, you are absolutely storming ahead here. So very well done. There's still lots to play for, but hopefully the rest of the year picks up for those of you that are in the negative. And hopefully I will continue to climb up the rankings and end somewhere near the top. But also, I've run the figures for the month of September. And it was a terrible month, generally speaking, the month of September for our contenders. Out of the, 143, only 35 had a positive return in September, just 35. And neither Peter nor I were in those lucky few. We both lost money in the month of September, so not doing too well. In third place, we had Oliver Hale at Omaha underscore triple one, whose portfolio included Future, Future Publishing, Entain, AstraZeneca, Ensilica, and Christie Group, returned 5.7%. In second place, we had Richard at Richard Sunt 76, with a portfolio that included Pan African Resources, Central Asian Metals, Centamine, Anglo Asian Mining, and Sarabi Gold. Got all the metals there. But our winner, with a return of 7.94%, was Kevin S. That's Kevin S at Kevin S 434-16583. He's a private investor from Scotland with more than 20 years investing, largely utilising funds on an invest-and-forget basis. If you've tuned in today, Kevin, I hope you're enjoying our episode on investment trusts. But very well done on your 7.94% return for the month of September. Please do get in touch with either Peter or myself, and we will get your prowess sorted out.
Fantastic. What was the stocks that Kevin was holding in his portfolio, Henry? Share those names with us, please, mate. That's because that's quite a low return, isn't it? 7.9 for us on a monthly basis.
Yes. We had a portfolio that included HVivo, Eurocell, Neox Group, Hargreaves Lansdown, and Watches of Switzerland Group.
Okie dokie.
And I still think you're bonkers for, talking about that a couple of episodes ago, but there we go. It did 21% last month, so someone made some money on it.
Which one? Which stock are you talking about there?
Watches of Switzerland Group.
I bought it, mate. I've now bought it.
Oh, you bought it as well? I still think. Well, you've got your 20% last month, so
Listen, what do I know? I said I'd be keeping an eye on it. I said I'd watch and wait. We'll wait and see. I've now bought. I'll declare it.
I realise that if I beat you in this competition, forevermore it will be held over your head.
No, listen. Obviously, I bought it for myself as a conviction buy. It's not something that's going to turn around in 1 month. You know what it's done in 1 month. It's going to be one of them where they either shake things up. People start to buy watches again. The China stimulus might help them a little bit. They've got to find other markets. I'm not waiting for anybody to write an article for me to tell me what to buy. Not many people are talking about it unless the share price is going up. And maybe when it gets to £5 or £6 or whatever price it going, and the media are jumping on it saying this is a recovery play that's going to be taken over, then more people might buy it. But I don't need to come out and declare it to everybody and write an article about it and ramp it. I did my research, I buy it, and then I wait and take the loss. Took the loss on DGI9, took the loss on Labs. I don't get it right all the time. But I'm not ramping and trying to encourage anybody else to buy it, Henry. I keep getting asked, oh, Pete, why haven't you told us which one there you've bought? Because I don't need to. Yeah? Well, this podcast has been going now for 6 odd years, right? 2 or 3 stocks every pod. So that's probably 400, maybe 350 stocks I've shared as really good research ideas and investment ideas. Do I need to declare every single stock I buy exactly when I buy it so that other people can piggyback on it who don't want to do any research? No. Because the minute that you put something out there, it's like, oh, what a load of crap that is. Oh, I can't believe you've gone out and bought that.
You're getting off of that from me.
It doesn't have to fit your criteria. It's not your money you're putting at risk. It's my money I'm putting at risk, and I get it wrong all the time. So you don't want to know what I'm buying anyway. And when I want to declare it, I will declare it, whether it's a good idea or a bad idea, whether it's up 10% or down 30%, I will declare it. And there we go. But let's go back and just congratulate Kevin regarding his win. I think that's probably the lowest percentage we've had as a win, because you were saying how bad it was for September. But congratulations anyway. Someone's got to win. And I didn't manage 7.9%. Minus 7.9% by the sounds of it any month so far. So there you go. Right, well done with that, Henry. Do you want to quickly just tell us where we are? Because you had some good input as well on the charity, mate. Had a few people coming in making some donations, and then we'll just give a couple of stocks more before we go. Or investment.
Well, I should say a huge thank you to the audience, because you know, we've again, you've excelled in your donations this month. We're up to £3,156 out of a target of 5,000, so we are inching there. 63% of our target from 71 supporters, including an anonymous £20 from an individual who only appears as anonymous on the page, but who also donated £30 to the Twin Peaks Ireland charity by mistake. Fortunately, it has gone to a good cause, and yes, your donation of £20 to the Twin Peaks challenge does very much help. So thank you. We've had £10 from Robin, great cause, lads. £25 plus £6.25 gift aid from Peter Dodge. Thanks for the valuable investment principles and supporting a good cause. £25 from our friend Pat Chi. Well done, Henry and Pete, for not only producing your investing podcast, but also choosing a very worthy cause for support this year. Keep up the good work. Thank you, Pat.
Brilliant.
And finally, we have had, in fact, I say finally, we've got two more. Paul E, that's spelt P-O-R-L, long-time subscriber. Always look forward to listening to the podcast and thoroughly enjoy it when I do. A truly worthwhile cause, and I hope my small donation of £25 helps in some way. It absolutely does, Paul, so thank you very much for your support. Indeed, and finally, we have £10 plus £2.50 gift aid from Rootmaster TPI, the podcast that just keeps on giving. Thanks, gents. Thank you very much, Rootmaster, and to all of our donors this month. Thank you very much.
Thank you ever so much, everyone. Thank you for your kindness. Obviously, as Henry mentioned in the last pod and mentions occasionally, it is going to Centre Point. We are trying to support homelessness regarding young people. One in 34 young people are going to need support this winter regarding becoming homeless for a variety of different reasons. So if you can support us, whether it be for £2 or £5 or £10, please do go to the Just Giving page. I think Henry's got the name of the URL where they can find it for you to make a donation. And we'd really appreciate that. We've got 3 months to go, ish. We're in month of October. So we've got November and December. And then we're going to close the book and make our donations to Centre Point. So if you can make a donation and show some goodwill for the podcast and its educational content, we'd really appreciate it. What's the Just Giving page, Henry, please?
It's www.justgiving.com/page/TwinPete'sChallenge24. That's Twin Pete's Challenge 24.
Brilliant. Right, I'm quickly going to talk about, I'm not going to go into too much detail because I've given the two recommended research ideas already. I'm going to quickly talk about some of the other entities that are on the cusp of becoming extended sort of dividend heroes. And we've got a few names here that some people will recognize. And we'll find a ticker for some of these because I haven't got them all. We've mentioned the Foreign Colonial already. We've got Caledonia, we've mentioned already, which is 57 years. Got the Global Smaller Companies Trust, which is on 53 years. Yeah. We've got the Brunner Investment Trust, that's BUT. That's done 52 years. That yields 1.7%. Performance over the course of, year to date is 15.6. That's actually having a good year this year, Henry. That may be another one for people to have a good look at. And its performance over 1 year is 31.6. I think people need to have a look on the bonnet as to why that's performed and done 31.6 over the past 12 months. So that's Brunner Investment Trust, BUT, to have a look at. There's JP Morgan Claver House, JCH, that yields 4.9%, and its performance over the past 12 months is 7.9%. So I just wanted to mention those very, very quickly as other ideas in that space that could do with being investigated. Because if they've managed to continue their dividend growth for 50 plus years, it's probably worth a merit to investigate. Maybe a slow, maybe stodgy, but it's the sort of thing, if other people have been able to manage to sleep at night for 51 years or more, maybe you could sleep quite well for 51 weeks or more, or 2 years or 3 years going forward. So that's the reason why I'm suggesting that. You don't have to go and buy the ones or invest in the ones that are highly recommended by other investors that have got a super high income yield on their portfolio. My adage is that if somebody is saying that their portfolio is yielding a significant amount, it's because the percentage return on the actual capital, what they invested in there, has reduced accordingly. And that's why it's got up. There's one chap I want to mention, and it's nothing to do with investment trust. It's to do with, I think it was Judges Scientific that Henry mentioned in the last podcast. And his name has just gone blank on me.
Alan.
What's this? Is it Kernow Scrubber?
That's the fella, yeah.
Right. So I want to give a big shout out to a chap. I think his Twitter handle is at Kernow Scrubber or something like that. The links.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's actually held Judges Scientific now. And at the last, when he mentioned it to us, it had been a 70 bagger. It had become a 70 bagger, folks. People looking for a double, people looking for 5%, people looking for 10 baggers. It's a 70 bagger for Kernow Scrubber. So you need to follow his account because he's done something or got in there very shrewdly. And that particular entity is now yielding at his initial purchase price 70%, right? Not an investment trust, obviously. It's a company that is held for absolute yonks. And now on the initial purchase price, it's yielding 7%. Judges Scientific, quality company. One of our better quality companies out there. Management are absolutely stellar. Still doing well. Keep an eye on that one. Obviously, it's already gone up 70-fold. So there is a caution there. We don't know how long that's going to last, but it might well continue. And just keep an eye out on that. I will mention again, because we're now on the 2nd of October, that on the 11th of October, the AIC will be doing their prestigious investment company showcase on the 11th of October at 133 Houndsditch, London. Got an absolute plethora of stellar fund managers that are going to be doing presentations and having conversations and be able to have access to them face-to-face, in person or online for the whole day. I'll be there moderating, chairing a panel. My one I'm covering is on technology. The question being, what is the next big thing regarding technology to watch that space? Regarding cutting edge technologies set to become commonplace and how can investors profit from it? The panel of experts that will be talking about that are Kirsty Gibson from Baillie Gifford US Growth, Tim Levine of Augmentum FinTech, and Michael Seidenberg of Alliance Technology. Those are the three I will be moderating and trying to get as much out of them as possible to share their wisdoms and knowledge regarding that particular subject at 3 p.m. to 3:40 on the 11th of October. So I look forward to seeing you, ladies and gents, there. You can go onto the AIC website and get yourselves a free ticket and just fill out the discount code, which is SHOW24. And I look forward to seeing you there. Okay, Henry, what do you want to add, mate, before we close this off?
I think that is everything for me. The main thing I want to leave our audience with is a thought. We do talk a lot about share picking. We talk a lot about portfolio management. We talk a lot about the ups and downs of the market. We don't tend to talk so much about investment trusts, but hopefully the sense you've got from today's episode is that, you know, investment trusts really can be a very good way of playing the market and benefiting from growth in the market and growing companies without having to take specific individual stock risk. You know, their ability to generate income over years, they, you know, some of them even build cash reserves. So Peter's talked a little bit about dividend heroes, which are companies that increase their dividends year after year after year. Part of the reason they're able to do this is if they take, say, £100 in dividends, they might only pay out £90 to the shareholders, and they keep the other £10 as cash in a reserve. And so next year, they can afford to pay £91, even if the dividends stay flat. And the year after, they can afford to pay £92 because they dip into that cash reserve. And so the cash reserve fluctuates over the years as dividends go up and down and profits go up and down. But over 30, 40, 50 years, things tend to go up and to the right. And that compounding effect over long periods of time really can be very, very substantial for investors. And hopefully some of the ideas we've talked about on the show today give you cause to go away and research some of these, because there really are some excellent names. You know, it's not all disasters like DGI9. There are some fantastic names in the space. And if you are looking for a research sort of platform, I can recommend the Association of Investment Companies, the AIC.com. who have got a very accessible website, lots of great articles, and even better, a really easy to use tool with all the investment trusts and listed companies on there. And you can search by the amount of borrowing they've got. You can search by their total returns over 1 year, 3 year, 10 years. You can search by the sector they're in, the country they're in. Lots of different ways of analysing the sector, but very, very good tool. And it's available completely for free on the AIC's website. So if you are interested in any of the names we've mentioned today or investment trusts more generally, I can recommend going and having a look.
Absolutely. And that website is www.theaic.co.uk. Before we go, I'm going to recommend this brand new book, My Library Keeps Expanding, Do Not Tell the Wife, anybody. Right? This book, absolutely extraordinary book. Not fully finished it yet. I'm just like, fantastic book. It is How to Live an Extraordinary Life by Anthony Pomigliano. Ex-forces, is invested in, started several companies, invested in over 200 companies, is interviewed an enormous number of the wealthiest people around the world. And he's basically written 65 letters, inspiring letters to his daughters. To his children, regarding how to live a better life, basically, how to run a business, how to maintain relationships, how to do well in life, how to maintain good health. So it's not an investment book per se, but there's so much in here that relates to investing. It is staggering, without selling you how to strategize regarding buying stocks, shares, Bitcoin, crypto, whatever. It's got nothing to do with that. But the investing insights in this book are staggering. Yeah. I don't often recommend a book enough, but I'm going to recommend that folks get out and buy this one, or at least look, get someone to buy it, put it on your Christmas list if you want it. And hopefully, fingers crossed, if we can run the competition for 2025, I will be asking Harriman House, who published this book, to put this into our 15 books of choice that people can win in 2025. So that's a wrap, folks. Henry, thank you ever so much again, mate. You smashed it with the insights regarding all the different minutiae of investment trust funds and all the different aspects of it. I'm hoping that people have found this very, very, very educational. We look forward to hearing your feedback. We look forward to hearing what you've got to say about what Henry shared, and the time he's taken on the research he's put together to deliver this pod with me. And let us know what your thoughts are regarding some of the investment trusts we spoke about, the good, the bad, the indifferent. You know, I will say what Henry would say. Have you been impacted by DGI9? I want to know about it, right? Have you been impacted by labs? We want to know about it. Have you been one of those fortunate ones that have held WWH and Worldwide Healthcare for the last 25 years and absolutely smashed it? Yeah? Or Caledonia? Let us know. Have you never ever bought a stock and always had investment trusts? Let us know. We want to hear about it. Okay, folks, that is it. Have a fantastic weekend. Stay dry. Check the roads before you go out because there's been flooding everywhere. And if you don't have to go out, put the heating on. Yeah. Just chill out. Put your slippers on. Yeah. Get your pipe and slippers. Chill out. Relax. Put your favorite TV program on. Get a nice scoop of ice cream. Put a dollop of Baileys on it and relax. Right. Ladies and gents, Henry, thank you very much, sir.
My pleasure.
Ladies and gents, take care. God bless. Over and out. That is a wrap for podcast 137. Bye bye for now.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.